This episode of Lawyers Tell All is brought to you by the Intake Academy. Do you know how to cement relationships with more of your ideal clients, get them to commit to you, and send you more referrals than you ever thought possible? Visit www.intakeacademy.com, where you will get the strategies you need to make the most of your marketing and advertising dollars. Plus, develop a team of intake specialists and attorneys who convert more qualified case opportunities and build meaningful relationships with prospective clients. Welcome to the Lawyers Tell All podcast. We're Chris Mullins, the preeminent sales and communications consultant in the legal industry, shows you how it looks through lawyers' eyes. Here, innovators in the trenches provide powerful insights that help you connect with new clients, handle the sometimes harsh realities of the legal profession, and embrace the mindsets needed to succeed. Be sure to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now, lean in, tune in, and let's take a deep dive.
Hello, everyone. It's Chris Mullins with Lawyers Tell All. And today I have attorney Paul Simon here that I'm going to interview. And Paul, why don't you just kind of tell yourself to everybody?
Hey, no problem. Good morning, everyone. I'm Paul Simon. I'm a partner at Hedgepeth Heredia here in Atlanta, Georgia. We are family law attorneys. We specialize in family law. That's all that we do. That includes divorce, child custody, child support, enforcement actions, adoptions, prenuptial agreements, postnuptial agreements, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And that's my intro.
So how did you get into family law? I mean, there's so many different types of law. What made you say, okay, I want to go to family?
Sure. Yeah. You know, when I came out of law school in 2013, I met a lot of different attorneys. I knew I wanted to be a litigator. I'm verbose. I don't mind conflict and I like competition. So I met with a bunch of different litigators, personal injury, commercial litigators, mm-hmm. all these different people. And it made me feel like it was going to be just a job, right? Not necessarily a career, because you hear these stories about someone's client getting bilked out of $200 million, whatever the case may be. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we got to do this and do this and do that. And then I met with some family law attorneys. Mm-hmm. And first off, the stories are amazing. Because you're dealing with real people, real circumstances. Every case is different, right? Mm-hmm. But every family law attorney has that one story. That one story that fills their heart up and is just like, this is why I do it. Mm-hmm. And I was hearing these stories and I'm like, you know what? That made a difference. Mm-hmm. That wasn't just litigation over money, litigation over property. That was actually about getting someone out of a situation or into a situation which was going to lead them down a path to be the best they can be it an adult, a party, or a child. And mm-hmm. it really meant something to me. And so that's when I made the decision that I wanted to do something that meant something to people, not just be a lawyer to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the one story?
Well, I can't share too much, I can tell you that my one story involved getting a child out of a really bad situation. Litigation lasted for about 18 months, mm-hmm. and it actually went to a final hearing. And this is back, was I an associate, a senior associate, something like that. And I was trying the case with my partner, Hannibal Heredia, who's the managing partner of the firm. And we were there all day mm-hmm. and the judge gave us what we wanted. And I remember walking outside, big hugs with the client, all that. And I remember Hannibal and I taking a moment to post game, talk about what we got to do next, all this sort of stuff. And I remember right before we left, I said, you know what, Hannibal? That was really cool, because that meant something.
Yeah.
So that's my one story there.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm sure you have many stories now.
Of course.
So tell me, what would you say the most important lesson so far is that you've learned? I mean, you probably have lessons on a regular basis, but
sure.
Like, sure. What would you say the biggest one is that other lawyers can probably learn from?
Patience, just patience with your clients, especially in a family law context. You have to realize that this is, especially in an initial proceeding or in a custody modification, something like that, this is likely the worst experience they've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're in full-blown litigation about their kids, you know, something that's so valuable to them, something that's so meaningful to them, that if a client sends you an email and they're kind of unloading on you, they're kind of unburdening themselves onto you, it's not personal. It's not personal at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's them having a trust in you that you're not going to lose it on them. They're saying the things to you that they want to say to their partner, but as a litigator, as the attorney for them, you definitely want them saying it to you instead of their partner or ex-partner, as the case may be. So it's really just patience, but you have to have your own boundaries. You have to have your own lines that don't get crossed. You don't have to sacrifice your integrity, your ethics, your morals to keep a client on board. You know, for example, if I have a client tell me that they want to do something, which I know is contrary to law, or I consider it to be unethical, I'll tell them I'm not going to do it. I'm absolutely not going to do it. The adage is you don't risk your reputation for one case, for one client, because this is, while there are a lot of family law attorneys in Atlanta, it's still a very small community. And one incident gets around and then you're that person, you're that attorney. And I don't want that to ever happen.
So you talk about not risking your reputation with regards to being ethical.
Right.
And what about risking your reputation for just poor service with the client?
It's never going to happen. It's unacceptable. It is in my opinion, the best compliment I could possibly receive is when a former client refers someone else to me. Because that means that they were satisfied with the services, that we got them to a point where hopefully they understand the reason it got to that point and they're satisfied with that resolution, even if it wasn't necessarily everything they want. I hold myself to a very high standard. And unfortunately, that sort of trickles down to you know, my paralegal's in the room next door. She's probably hearing me as I say this. And he's like, yeah, Paul's a little much sometimes. But when you have high standards, you keep high standards, you can look back on what you've done in a case and say, yes, I executed that to the best of my ability. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, we checked for, I'm very type A about checking for typos. I'm very type A about making sure those little basics are right. You know, getting the address right, getting the kids' names right, getting their year of birth right. And then I'm also very meticulous about the customer service side of it, because that's what we are. We are a service industry. And I have a rule that I tell all my prospective clients in the initial consultation. If you email me, if you call me, you're going to hear back from me in 24 hours, if not 24 minutes, presuming, you know, it's during normal business hours. But there are limits to that, because sort of like what I was talking about earlier, you have to have your own boundaries. You have to have your own space. And if there's not a hearing or a mediation coming up, I'm a person too. I need a break. And so we have the weekends, but you're going to hear back from me, even if I'm in court or if I'm unavailable. Say, I'm doing this, received, I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. And it helps to build that trust of knowing that I'm going to be in touch, because if there are times when, for example, I had a 5-day trial in June and I was just completely out of pocket. But at the end of the day, when we got done with court, I would sit there at the end while the sheriffs were sort of while the staff was sort of closing down the courtroom, shooting off emails saying, hey, listen, I've been in court all day. I'm coming back. Because once you build that trust that you're listening, that you're paying attention, clients will understand. Or at least in my experience, clients will understand if they don't hear back from you or within that time, but it's 24 hours. You know, mm-hmm. service is the level of service has to be consistent.
Yeah.
It has to be consistent. And if you have high standards, you keep high standards.
Right. So what in your opinion is happening when the number one bar complaint is lack of communication,
right,
from attorneys specifically?
Right.
And then what's going on, do you think, in an attorney's mind or in their life or what have you, when first they feel the way you do or close to it, but then it all falls apart?
Right.
And they're just not doing what they say they're going to do. And they look at the client as an interruption.
Mm-hmm. There are attorneys out there who are excellent salesmen, saleswomen, salespersons. And they'll tell you what you want to hear. You know, mm-hmm. I'm always going to be in contact. Here's my cell phone. Here's my email. Here's my home address, all this sort of stuff. You contact me. Any time of day, I'm mm-hmm. going to be with you just to get that initial retainer in. And mm-hmm. then when you actually retain, it's a completely different experience. Now, obviously not going to name names, but it's something that I hear quite mm-hmm. often when I'm contacted by someone who's in litigation who needs a substitution who wants someone to substitute in. And I give them that promise. To me, it's very important, but sometimes in my experience, there are attorneys who make this pitch, the pitch is good, and then they sort of revert to their status quo, how they feel about it. And then there are also situations, unfortunately, where attorneys don't look at it the same way I do in terms of how frustrating these people are. And they just don't want to deal with it. So they push it off.
Mm-hmm.
They just put it off to the side. I'll deal with it later. I'll deal with it later. And that procrastination leads eventually to a breakdown in trust, which leads to a breakdown of communication, which ultimately impacts the case, because if your client doesn't trust you,
mm-hmm.
that you're giving them good advice or good counsel, the whole thing breaks down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you, like, what kind of advice would you give an attorney for, like, mindset or mm-hmm. morals to look at, or
right.
the people that you spend time with, like how to build yourself to that level of excellence? Like what yeah. steps should they be doing and thinking about? What should be on their checklist?
Right. Everybody has their own personal code, right? Everyone has these tenets that they live by, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How I was brought up, for lack of mm-hmm. a better word. I've been practicing for 9 years. I'm here at my second firm. I've been here for 6 years. It's something that's been ingrained in me from when I was a young child. My parents, I wouldn't say they're workaholics necessarily, but they're hard workers, and they put that in me
mm-hmm.
and they ingrained that in me, and I've carried that over. And then from beginning my legal career to where we are now, you refine that and you understand the nuance of actually having that forward-facing relationship with the client. You have to understand yourself and your mm-hmm. mentality and how you approach these things. And then you have to set clear expectations. If you're at a firm where you are the partner and you bring the business in and you know that you may never touch the case again, you're going to pass it down to associate. You have to tell them that, or you should tell them that, to set an expectation. Because then all of a sudden, if you don't tell them that, the client reaches out to you and they don't receive a response to you, or the message just gets passed on to the associate who's working the case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's establishing what the relationship looks like. And if you're just in this profession for the money, if this is a job to you, this may not be the best thing for you,
yeah.
especially family law.
But why do some attorneys become attorneys if they're not really comfortable communicating and working with people intimately on a regular basis?
It's a great question. And the thing about it is, some people go to law school because it's what's expected of them. Some people go to law school because they don't have really any other good options. Some people go to law school because they think, oh, I'm going to come out of law school and I'm going to make six figures and I'm going to have this nice, upper middle class life. there's also something to be said about people who don't have that, who don't place that importance on their communication skills, on being upfront and social and communicative, who go into litigation. And maybe that's not the right thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they need to go in-house. Maybe they need to be corporate, mergers, acquisitions, that sort of thing. So sort of building off communicating who you are to clients, you have to figure out who you are and where you can shine. Mm-hmm. You may want to get into litigation, but is that your best and highest use?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole thing is really understanding yourself if you want to be good at it.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad they didn't have that kind of education in law school to help you figure out if you should even be here.
Yeah. I mean, well, the issue is the old adage that law school doesn't teach you how to be a lawyer. Law school just teaches you the law school teaches you how to think like a lawyer. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true. Law school teaches you how to write briefs, okay? Like, yeah. and read case law, and maybe you do trial court or right. trial team or moot court, that sort of thing. So the only thing that can teach you how to be a lawyer is getting out there and being a lawyer.
Right.
That's the only thing that can do it. And some people don't like it after they get out in the real world and have a year of experience. They're like, I don't want to do this. So some people wash out, and that's fine. And that's fine. Okay, at least you realize it early and you don't get burnt out. But mm-hmm. you know, I went to law school to be an attorney. That's mm-hmm. why I went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
This was to some extent preordained. Because I'm squeamish. I don't like blood or injuries or anything like that.
Okay, and so the doctor route didn't work.
Right, exactly. And I think that I couldn't be, you know, an accountant or something sitting in a room, because I don't know if you could tell, I've got all this, I don't know if it's personality, but I'm verbose and I like to talk. And so just sitting in an office crunching numbers all day was not going to make me happy, but it makes me happy.
Yeah. And the other thing too is attorneys, at least the attorneys that we work with, mm-hmm. with training and trying to teach them communications and relationship skills, right. it's almost like they didn't realize that they had to do that. And a lot right. of the attorneys don't even want to be in court. They don't right. even want to go to court. They're like hiding in the office. They don't, right. they don't want to go to trial.
That's right. That's right. and that comes from, you know, sort of building off, okay, who are you? What is your personality? Where do you shine? You have to be a little bit competitive. You have to be a little in order to be good at this, because, you know, ultimately your obligation is to your client. Okay. Your job is to advise and counsel. Your job is not to make decisions for them. And I make that very, very clear. Like, look, here's their offer, pros, cons. And in that posture, you don't necessarily want to be competitive. You want to have good negotiation skills. So you know what your counteroffer should be. And then you also kind of want to know where it's going to land. For example, child support, to some extent, we have an Excel spreadsheet. We have an Excel spreadsheet. There are certain values that absolutely get popped in, but what you can do is manipulate the number a little bit. And I've given two presentations on this. You can manipulate the number a little bit depending on the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point during a mediation, it's a number. And so if you're at 1,000, if your client's at 1,000 and they're at 1,500, okay, let's move to 1,125, something like that. Understand what works with your client's budget, also what supports the children, and eventually you reach an agreement. But if you have to go to court, if you have to put it up, as we say, I'm sure you've heard that expression before,
mm-hmm, yeah.
you're playing to win. You're absolutely playing to win.
That's right.
While setting expectations for your client of what a likely outcome looks like. But the issue there is that you can only set those expectations by going to court with that judge and knowing what they like to do. I mean, that's the thing about it. I mean, that's the whole rub in it. And I've spoken with Hannibal, who I mentioned earlier, managing partner.
Mm-hmm.
This practice, a litigator's practice, is built on conflict.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just can't get it done in a mediation or some sort of other alternative dispute resolution method, mm-hmm. and you have to go put it up. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame, but you know, that's how it works.
I think what you said earlier is probably like the most important thing for attorneys is to understand at the very, very beginning what type of attorney, based on who you are,
right,
can you be and do you want to be? Like, how does that fit? How can you negotiate with yourself
right
to get that appropriate position? But the other thing too is I want all attorneys to remember and to keep in their mind is that if your client doesn't trust you because you don't do what you say, even in your mind, if you think, well, it's just, I didn't call them at 2, I called them 3 days later. What's the big deal? But if you don't do what you're going to say, they're not going to trust you. And then when it comes time to negotiation, you're going to have one heck of a time because they're not going to trust you.
That's 100% right. And the way that I think about it is, let me put myself in their shoes. I need to get in touch with my doctor. I call, I send them, they all have online portals now, right? You send a message to the online portal and you don't hear from them for a week. This is your doctor. This is your health.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put yourself from that perspective, it's just like, okay, do I want to be good at this? Is that a fundamental part of customer service? It's the easiest thing in the world to do, to sit there and crank out an email. That's mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And if you have to schedule a phone call, schedule a phone call if the topic's too broad to talk about in an email. I mean, it's just the simplest thing that an attorney can do is customer service. That's mm-hmm. it. Practicing law, the legal life, as it were, it's not easy. We all knew this coming in. No one was under the impression that this was going to be easy. So the job is hard. The career is hard. What is easy is being responsive.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's so easy. And some lawyers just don't get it. I mean, I haven't really thought about it recently, but the amount of clients that I've gotten when I've substituted in or who wanted new litigation but changed from their attorney, and part of the reason was that they can never get in touch with their attorney, it's massive.
It's massive. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying. It is so massive.
Right.
And I wouldn't want to substitute for any attorney or law firm that had the reputation of not doing what they say, because now it's on me.
That's right. Well, you know, there is a clear line, and that sort of goes to reputation. It sort mm-hmm. of goes to reputation because this is a small pond with a lot of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And once you build up the reputation and people know you're coming in, they can sort of know what to expect. I had a case recently where original counsel, opposing counsel, we just weren't getting along. I don't know what it was. I've mm-hmm. known this person. We were not getting along. And someone substitutes in who I know well and who I like, and immediately everything calms down. Immediately everything calms down.
Yeah.
And it's a circumstance where we all know each other for the most part. We all know who we are because we have these little social gatherings and all that. And so we get to know each other. You ask around, and if you never work with someone before, hey, do you know this person? Yeah, good person, all this sort of stuff. So what I've heard and what I like to think mm-hmm. is that when
you're going to say now, Paul.
Well, no, I like to think that when I'm in a case, when I'm on a side of the case, people are like, okay, Paul's a reasonable guy. He'll do what he says he's going to do, but he's not going to get pushed around. That's what I like. That's what I've heard. I don't know if people are just blowing smoke to make me happy, which is fine. I'll accept it. But this is a reputation business. That's all it is.
It is. Yeah. So that's good, though. You want to be thought of that way because,
I mean,
that's good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
So if that was your goal, you've reached your goal.
It's a goal. It's a goal for sure. Yeah. You know, because I know how I felt when someone's entered a case. I'm like, oh, no, not them. I've felt that. And people are going to feel that about me. That's fine. Not everyone's going to like you in this job. It's impossible. But generally speaking, I don't need to be liked. I mean, I'd like to be liked, but if I can come into a case or if I'm on the other side of a case and there's someone I know or someone reaches out to me and says, hey, we never worked before, but I've heard good things. Let's get this wrapped up. Let's get this figured out.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. So speaking of goals, what are your goals?
Oh, gosh.
I know that's a broad question, but let's just see if I can answer it.
it is a broad question. I mean, I recently wrote a piece about this, shameless plug, in The Verdict, which is the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association periodical journal, sort of about the transition from an associate of mine to a partner of mine.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So you're in law school.
Sounds like a book, Paul. Sounds like a book.
Listen, I try to keep it as short as possible. I try to
go for it. Okay.
While still getting across the message. And you're in law school and your understanding is, oh, your partner, you hit the big time. Great, great, great. So once you once you paid your dues, as it were, and you become partner, the mindset shifts to, okay, I have this title that is in and of itself a reward for good work, years of service, et cetera, et cetera. How do I become a better leader? Because the mindset shifts. Of course you're going out there and marketing. Of course you're bringing in business. You know, you have that basic function, but you have a responsibility to staff. You have a responsibility to other attorneys. You have a responsibility to your partners to exercise discretion in a manner that's appropriate for the role. So right now, my goal, or my goals as it were, is of course to bring in business, to keep the firm profitable, all that sort of stuff, but also to make sure that we're efficient, make sure our processes move the way we're supposed to do. If there's an issue, let's figure out a problem and let's do it now. Let's not wait. Let's toss it around and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then also to maintain, I don't know if harmony is the right word, I'll use it, maintain a sense of harmony between everybody in the office. Now, it's, you know, we have 8 attorneys, we have 5 staff. It's a small office. Everyone knows each other's business, all right? So there are going to be, I don't know if cliques is the right word, but people are going to like some people more than the other, but everybody just needs to get along. Everybody just needs to get along. That's it. And as long as we can get along and as long as we can keep this place a good place to work and a good place to grow, regardless of your position, regardless of your goals, that's thrilling.
Yeah.
So that's something that is a goal of mine that I don't know if you ever truly achieve that goal because you're always learning. You're always processing.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what I wish for you. And for every other attorney and law firm that's listening, is that you don't forget about the word empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy focused with clients, but also empathy focused internally. So we have our external customers and we have our internal customers.
That's right.
Meaning all of our team members. And so we need to make sure that the empathy that we've worked so hard to have with our clients and remember to have, we need to do the same thing internally. And sometimes we kind of forget, we feel like sometimes that, well, it's our team, they know who we are. So we don't really have to worry about that as much, but we do because your team, they're not you.
That's right.
And that's right. They think differently and they need to have different types of emotions dealt with, not just with getting along with other departments, but getting along with each other. Or when changes need to happen, they need to feel like they're part of something. And sometimes we forget about that with our internal team.
That's right. I mean, it's about caring about people, which sort of goes back to the point of what do you want to do as a lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't genuinely care about people, you're not going to make it in family law, period. Mm-hmm. End of story. You may do better with commercial litigation, you know, civil defense, whatever you want to call it. But if you don't care about people working at a boutique firm like ours, working directly with people, you're not going to make it done. And the thing that I see so much, because I've been lucky, I am fortunate to have a nice network here in town and people I like and respect a lot and who I refer business and refer business to me, is that some people think that the best way to show appreciation is with money, with gifts. Listen, no one's going to turn down money. Let's just call it what it is. But I care about these people in the office. And every day, I just sort of walk around, and talk with people, try and get in the lap, see what's going on. And if you notice someone maybe not themselves, hey, everything good. Anything you want to talk about. It's about caring. It's about It's about caring for your fellow human being. And mm-hmm. that's corny and that's sappy, but it's true. It's true.
Well, see, the big question for everybody is, could you sit down and could you write a bio, just maybe 700 words, 650 words, of the team members that you're responsible for? So that would be a good little test for everybody to see if they could do that. And, it's not a professional bio, it's a personal bio. So do you know enough about them to do 650 words? And if not, it's something you kind of want to aspire to be able to do for that relationship. And you know, I think with that mindset, you can go much, much further.
100%.
I think the biggest thing though is just the last thought for everybody, and then you can give your last thoughts as well. Money doesn't last. No. I mean, it just, you just go spend it and it's gone. You put it on a bill, it's gone. What really lasts is recognition. So recognizing someone specifically for something they did versus you did a great job, but be really specific and timely. That makes a big difference.
100%. 100%. 100%. You know, and thank you for having me on. This has been, it's actually been very good for me to kind of process these feelings and sort of give me a reminder of the importance of these things and a reaffirmation. And it's timely as we're going into the new year.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And if I could give one word of advice to lawyers, one word, I've never said just one word in my entire life. If I could give one bit of advice to lawyers, is that you can be very good at being a lawyer if you're properly situated for your personality. Don't fake it. Don't fake it. Because if you fake it, you're going to get tired of faking it, and then something's going to happen. Be somewhere. Be it with a firm. Be in a practice area that suits your personality. I couldn't go do wills, trusts, and estates. I couldn't do it. I'd go crazy. Yeah. I am where I am supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that has much to do with my progress in the field and hopefully what people think about me in the field. Yeah. So it's really, it really comes down to understanding who you are. Mm-hmm. And once you understand who you are, everything can flow from that.
Yeah. And you know, for everybody out there, this is not to say that it's easy, because it's not easy. I'm sure even Paul has had his own challenges to get where he wants to be in life. And wherever you are, you could still get to where you want to be. You just have to do the work. It's work. It's hard work, and you got to do the work. And that's basically it.
You know, playtime's over. You know, school's out.
Playtime's over.
School's out. School's out.
And school's been out. School's been out, everybody.
School's been out. You know, sometimes I just think to myself, gosh, what I would give to go back to college, what I would give to go back to the University of Georgia, and just, those are simpler times.
Yeah. You work too hard to get where you are. So stay where you are for now.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for your time, Paul. I really appreciate it. Any last words for everybody?
I think if you're watching this podcast, then you're interested in being a lawyer and developing as a lawyer. So good on you for those efforts. Last shameless plug, Paul Simon, partner at Hedge Peth Aretti in Atlanta. We handle all family law needs. You know, so if you or someone you know reaches out to me and they say, hey, I heard you on the Lawyers Tell All podcast, happy to chat with you. Just reach out. And we'll handle that situation.
Awesome. Take it easy. So long, everybody. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into Lawyers Tell All, where Chris Mullins takes you on a journey with lawyers in the trenches who show you the realities of what it takes to succeed in this chaotic, crowded, ever-changing profession. Remember to visit our website at www.lawyerstellall.com. And enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on Lawyers Tell All.